look at.
Is draining the swamp renting an apartment from the wife of a Washington lobbyist?
I don't think that that's even remotely fair to ask that question.
Okay, so why did you then accept $50 a night to rent a condo from the wife of a Washington lobbyist?
Well, let's talk about that.
That is something that, again, has been reviewed by ethics officials here. They've said that it's market rate.
You're renting it from the wife of a lobbyist.
Yeah, who has no business before this agency.
Hold on. There. So you only paid for the nights you rent, you were there.
That's exactly right.
So, but that's kind of a sweetheart deal because...
No,
like,
it's not.
Oh, my. What a tangled web that we weave. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 249. My name is Melvin, and I want to thank you so much for being here. So there he is in all of his glory, Scott Pruitt, the head of the EPA, doing what the head of the EPA is supposed to do, and that is cleaning up the environment.
If you're committed to the Trump agenda, why did you go around the president and the White House to give pay raises to two staffers?
I did not. My staff did, and I found out about that yesterday, and I changed it.
You don't know? You run the agency. You don't know who did
this? I found out about this yesterday, and I corrected the action.
So
we are in the process of finding out how it took place and correcting it.
So hang on. Both of these staffers who got these large pay raises are friends of yours, I believe, from Oklahoma, right?
They are staffers here in the agency.
Then they're friends of yours.
Well, they serve a very important person.
And you didn't know that they got these large pay raises?
I did not know that they got the pay raises until yesterday.
Okay.
So by definition, filling the swamp is Scott Pruitt's idea of cleaning up the environment. I'm not going to be able to be with him on that one. And this is what he's known for right now. He's not even really known as the EPA chief. And that's probably better for the rest of us. The rest of the world has decided to go ahead and continue to work towards cleaning up the environment, the air, the water, dirt, the atmosphere. But we have decided to put somebody in charge of everything that is anti that thing that they are in charge of. As Americans, we tend to create a lot of the waste that's in the environment. And that is because we've decided that we do not want to move in the direction that is going to clean up the environment. For whatever reason, we don't see the earth as home and we don't really care if it's clean. We're fighting getting rid of coal, which is stunning to me. That's such an old energy. And then gasoline, that's an even older energy. And it was, nope, can't do it. You're going to take away Americans' jobs and blah, blah, blah. Gasoline is going up again. And let me be upfront. I don't care. Let it go as high as it wants. $10 a gallon. Fine. Because something special happens whenever gasoline starts going up. And it's happening now. So in my area, the Portland, Vancouver area, it's a little over $3 a gallon. Mercy me. I drive a teeny tiny car. I'm okay for now. But in California, it's over $4 a gallon in a lot of places, and in a sprinkling of places, it's over $5 a gallon. California was already talking about ways to get off of gasoline, but of course, every time the price goes up like this, it really kicks it into high gear, and it needs to happen. There's an article over at The Guardian, headline, Gulf Stream Current at its weakest in 600 years, according to studies. So what does that mean? There's a Gulf Stream, you know, that carries the air. You know, if you can look at these on map, they're super hard to explain. But there's one that goes over Europe. And I've talked about this in the past, if that one continues to slow too much, what it's going to do is it's going to plunge a good chunk of Europe into an ice age. And then for the rest of us, we're probably just going to get hotter. It's throwing off all of those jet streams that move this air around the world. Quoting here, the warm Atlantic current linked to severe and abrupt changes in climate in the past is now at its weakest in 1600 years. The findings based on multiple lines of scientific evidence throw into question previous predictions that a catastrophic collapse of the Gulf Stream would take centuries to occur. Such a collapse would see Western Europe suffer far more extreme winters, sea level rise on the eastern seaboard of the U.S., and would disrupt vital tropical rains. The new research shows that the current is now 15% weaker than around 400 A.D., an exceptionally large deviation, and that human-caused global warming is responsible for at least a significant part of the weakening. The current, known as the Atlantic Meridional Overturning Circulation, AMOC, carries warm water northwards towards the North Pole. There it cools, becomes denser, sinks, and then flows back southwards. But global warming hampers the cooling of the water while melting ice in the Arctic, particularly from Greenland. Floods the area with less dense freshwater, weakening the AMOC current. Scientists know that AMOC has slowed since 2004 when instruments were deployed at sea to measure it. But now two studies have provided comprehensive ocean-based evidence that the weakening is unprecedented in at least 1,600 years, which is as far back as the new research stretches. So it might even be further than that, but that's as far back as the research goes. So with us helping to create so much of the waste that's destroying the environment and being really the only developed nation that has decided that we do not want to take charge. You go, oh, but Melvin, hold on. Lots of us believe in this. Lots of us know that global warming is real, that climate change is happening. Lots of us believe in this. And nobody that believes in that wants Donald Trump to be president. Remember, he doesn't have a majority. And of course, that's the guy that picks all of these cabinet level positions. None of us likes that guy. Yeah, none of us likes that guy. But none of us really wanted to get out and do anything about it. Look, I keep hearing about the blue wave of 2018. The blue wave is coming, the blue wave. And I think a lot of that talk is just going to lull people into this false sense of security, and they're not going to get out and do much about it. So I am here now, and I will be here hammering on you until November to get the hell out there and start putting people in charge that care about how clean their home is.
I believe that Donald Trump in the White House would be more abusive of the Constitution than Barack Obama, and that's saying a lot.
So that was Scott Pruitt during the election, simply speaking his mind. But of course, now that he is in charge over at the EPA, the job that he absolutely effing hates.
You said some pretty tough stuff. You said about the president, quote, this is in 2016. I think he's an empty vessel when it comes to things like the Constitution and rule of law. You said that about Donald Trump.
Look, I was misinformed.
I was misinformed. Oh, my God. I did not know that he was going to put. So Carl Icahn worked a lot with Donald Trump during the election. Crooked Carl Icahn. After Donald Trump was elected president, Carl Icahn, that's the guy who picked Scott Pruitt, went. Donald Trump doesn't know what he's doing. Went to Donald Trump and said you should pick Scott Pruitt. But he goes, why don't you get in touch with Scott Pruitt, send him to me, let me talk to him. And of course, Carl Icahn is a climate denier. So Pruitt goes to talk to Icahn, and then he said, you know, Icahn calls Donald Trump and says, okay, that's the guy. Absolutely effing hates the environment. You know, just dead inside when it comes to the environment. Hire that guy. And so that's the guy that we get.
He's now issued a believe me now that I'm employed by him, not then when I was not statement. Quote, after meeting him, Donald Trump, and now having the honor of working for him, it is abundantly clear that President Trump is the most consequential leader of our time. No one has done more to advance the rule of law than President Trump. The president has liberated our country from the political class and given America back to the people.
It's not a secret that if you are willing to give this president a tongue bath, then he is willing to give you whatever the hell you want. When world leaders meet with him, they do the same thing. They go, oh, Mar-a-Lago is beautiful. Your children are beautiful. And then Donald Trump just rolls over and lets him rub his belly. And they know that that's the best way to get stuff. So even though Scott Pruitt said all that stuff, got hired by Donald Trump. He goes, okay. Hates the environment, wants to make tons and tons of money off it. Yeah, he gave one of the people that worked at the EPA a $56,000 a year pay raise. That wasn't her base salary. That was how much he raised her pay. No. It gets better. Oh, it gets way better. She didn't even show up to work. Now, for me, I don't show up to work. then that's it. I think the policy at my particular employer is you don't show up twice and you don't call either time, then that's just firing. But if you work for Scott Pruitt, you get a $56,000 pay raise, you don't show up for a few months, hey, good on you. So it's not all bad with the environment. I don't want to, you know, oh my God, it's coming down. No. Easy. There are some good things happening, and I can't highlight them all. It's only a 1 hour show. But I would like to highlight something in particular. This also from The Guardian. The headline, scientists accidentally create mutant enzyme that eats plastic bottles. This was really okay. Garbage Island. I don't know if anyone's heard of Garbage Island. It's exactly what it sounds like. And it's not a naturally occurring thing. These plastic bottles, especially plastic bottles and plates, and they get thrown away. And for the most part, they just end up out in the environment. They're light, they're plastic, they can even blow away. Because of some of our environmental regulations, here and around the world, we can get away with dumping trash sometimes. And that trash eventually ends up in the ocean. And so now there's just this gigantic floating island in the Pacific made of bottles and plates and doll heads and all kinds of dumb things. You heard about a little while ago, there used to be this, I think it was a hand soap that had little tiny plastic beads in it. How freaking dumb. And they go, no, get your hands cleaner. I don't know. I use soap on my hands all the time, and that seems to work pretty good getting them clean. But like, oh, it's got these little plastic beads in it. And you wash the plastic beads down the sink. I can't see how that could potentially go wrong. So I've got all this plastic waste everywhere. And plastic is great for so many things. But the problem is when you throw it away. So you're done with it. But it doesn't go away. It doesn't break down. It just... No. It lasts for almost ever. And that's not hyperbole. It takes so long to break down. Something that you used as a baby. Let's just say your diapers. Sorry, I know. Your diapers as a baby, if they've not been environmentally processed, then they're still there. Like, your diapers are still there. That's how insane plastic is. And that's even if you're 80. It's still there. It doesn't take care. It takes so long. And the plastic is a huge problem. In my area, Seattle has already gotten, I believe that Seattle's already gotten rid of plastic straws, moved to paper straws. And Portland is working on doing the same thing. And I did. I went into a restaurant the other day and they gave me a paper straw. Hell yeah. See, because paper breaks down. I mean, paper breaks down the pulp pretty easily. That straw, I've not had a drink with a straw sitting in it for a couple of hours, but I know with plastic, of course, it'd still be there, but I don't know. It feels like if you take too long to drink your drink, maybe it would start breaking down. That's a whole other thing, but hey, it's not supposed to take you that long to drink it anyway. You ordered it, you got it, because that's what you wanted at the time. Get your plastic straw or your paper straw, drink out of your paper straw, throw the thing away, and boom, Bob's your uncle. Okay, so quoting here, scientists have created a mutant enzyme that breaks down plastic drink bottles. The new research was spurred by the discovery in 2016 of the first bacterium that had naturally evolved to eat plastic at a waste dump in Japan. Scientists have now revealed that the detailed structure of the crucial enzyme produced by the bug. The international team that then tweaked the enzyme to see how it would evolve, but then tests showed that they had inadvertently made the molecule even better at breaking down polyethylene terephthalate, that's PET. The plastic used for soft drink bottles. The mutant enzyme takes a few days to start breaking down the plastic, far faster than the centuries it takes in the oceans. But the researchers are optimistic that this can be sped up even faster and become a viable large-scale process. What we're hoping to do is use this enzyme to turn this plastic back into its original components so that we can literally recycle it back into plastic. It means that we don't need to dig up any more oil, and fundamentally, it should reduce the amount of plastic in the environment. About 1 million plastic bottles are sold each minute around the globe. With just 14% of them recycled, many end up in the oceans where they have polluted even the most remote parts, harming marine life and potentially people who eat seafood. It is incredibly resistant to degradation. Some of those things are horrific, says one of the scientists. It is one of these wonder materials that has been made just a little bit too well.
What I'm doing is to try and unbrainwash people.
It's the environment, kids.
Solutions that
and I'm not going to take the whole damn show. But it's something that we really need to start paying more attention to. We'll bring you more on the Scott Pruitt thing when it comes up. But until then, let's move on to the other things that have been breaking this week.
The bold solution. The bold solution. Individual effort. The bold solution.
I don't buy this stuff about him being mentally incompetent or early stages of dementia. He strikes me as a person of above average intelligence who's tracking conversations and knows what's going on. I don't think he's medically unfit to be president. I think he's morally unfit to be president. A person who sees moral equivalence in Charlottesville, who talks about and treats women like they're pieces of meat, who lies constantly about matters big and small and insists the American people believe it, that person's not fit to be president of the United States. On moral grounds, our president must embody respect and adhere to the values that are at the core of this country, the most important being truth. This president is not able to do that. He is morally unfit to be president.
So, James Comey's out there right now. I don't know if you've heard anything about that. Just sort of making the rounds, doing a book tour. He is coming to Portland, Oregon, and to speak and sign books and all the rest. And I did try to get tickets to see him. And they are mad sold out at $40 a ticket. I've gone to lots of book signings, one that included Jimmy Carter, and never had to pay. So yeah, James Comey's doing it right now. He got fired, but so he has this really fun position where during the 2016 election, where he was hated by progressives because of what he did 9 days before the election, reopening the Hillary Clinton investigation. And then, of course, hated by conservatives a few months before that because he refused to indict her because they don't like her. And then, of course, since then, he got fired by Donald Trump, which means if you're a Trumper, you automatically hate him. But he's also been very critical of the president, which means the progressives now like him. Let me give you exactly where I'm at on him. And I don't make my decisions based on things like that. Yeah, I did not like that 9 days before the election, he reopened that investigation because I go, you know what, I'm still going to win. But in the back of my mind, I went, holy flapjacks, this might cost her the election. This doesn't look good. Now, Donald Trump can be on tape talking about sexually assaulting women, and that's fine because that's what people expect from him. But she cannot be seen as a criminal. Now, of course, he gets to be seen as a criminal. Comey mentioned that he said, yeah, during the election, he goes, I didn't, you know, really want to do that. I'm paraphrasing here, not quoting. He says, but if she won the election, he goes, I thought she was going to win the election. And there's still these lingering questions about the email investigation. He said, if she became president, she would automatically be seen as an illegitimate president if I didn't have all this cleaned up. Now, that sounds very okay. Maybe that's really what it is. But all the stories I was hearing at that time was the FBI, it has a lot of conservatives in it. And that's not a bad thing. But the reason why it does is a lot of those guys are ex-military. You don't just go to the FBI and get an FBI. You got to have some relevant experience. Quite a bit, actually. You should have something in law enforcement. I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff that goes in to working for the FBI. And so all the stories that I had read at that time was that the FBI, and I remember the headline from Politico, the FBI is Trumpland. It's full of conservatives. And so me, you know, being the partisan I am, I go, well, it's full of conservatives. And they just, you know, they just wanted to make him, they just want to make him president. And maybe that's still the case. And maybe Comey's got some regrets about that now, because as soon as he met with the president, he goes, "Oh, Mr. President, there's we heard about a P-tape, you, Russian prostitutes, P-tape." And he goes, oh, my wife can't hear about that. Oh, she thinks that that's true. And he goes, what? Why would your wife think that's true? Because she can just believe that kind of thing. Because you. Oh. And before the rest of us even got to see Trump perform as president, Comey had already gotten a taste of the Trump. The Trump that everybody that spent a lot of time around him knows. And of course, the Trump that Putin knows, because it sounds like Putin is in possession of a P-tape. There is an article over at CNN by Chris Saliza. And the headline says, "The 11 most eye-opening lines in Jim Comey's A Higher Loyalty Ranked." So I'm not going to read them all. But the first couple of them talk about their quotes from his appearance. Here, I'll give you just one of the appearance ones. "His face appeared slightly orange with bright half moons under his eyes, where I assumed he placed small tanning goggles, and impressively coiffed. Bright blonde hair, which upon close inspection looked to be all his. As he extended his hand, I made a mental note to check its size. Smaller than mine, but that did not seem unusually so." Okay, and there's a few of these. He goes on to talk about, you know, this, his orange skin and all this other crap. And so the media has been, oh, why would you cheapen yourself like that, Jim Comey? Why not just stick to the facts of the case and what the president did and said and da-da-da-da-da? But as we learned from the last segment and what we already know about Donald Trump, is giving the man a tongue bath will get you everything in the world. But of course, the opposite means the same. And he knows that Donald Trump cannot handle being scrutinized at all, cannot handle being criticized. Just, he can't, there's no way. Donald Trump's the most perfect person in the world. So I believe that this is a calculated move by Jim Comey to get Donald Trump attacking him more. Because a couple of things are going to happen. One, Comey's got money to make. Comey's going to sell more books. And I'm not going to pretend that's not a thing. Because it is. But also, pissing off Donald Trump also gets him to act more irrational. He acts more irrational. He does more irrational things. Of course, you extrapolate that out, that could mean World War III. But it could also mean a slip-up that leads to Mueller indicting him. Or indicting some very important people around him. And one of the things that Comey said in the interview, he said, "I don't want him impeached." Through all this, you don't want him impeached. And I have in the past been for the idea of impeachment. I just effing hate this guy. You know, a homophobe, sexually assaults women, and endorsed a pedophile, and, you know, hooker P-tape and all this other crap. I got to explain to my kids what a goddamn hooker P-tape is. I didn't have to do that before. You know, I didn't have to explain, you know, oh, Stormy Daniels. I don't know who Stormy Daniels is. Man. But now I have to. Because this is Donald Trump. The evangelical president. Now I got to tell him what all this stuff is. Oh, that. God dang it. All right. Well, you're going to get me. But he says, "I don't want Donald Trump impeached. I want the people to vote him out. I want to remove from office that way." And ever since the election, it's been in my head, and I think a lot of other people's heads, impeach, impeach, impeach. And this was done by the people who hated Barack Obama. Impeach, impeach, impeach. Before he had even served day one in office, impeach, impeach, impeach. And I think that we think that that's where it's over. And it's not. It's definitely not. Because no matter what, this guy gets a term. And of course, it could be damaging to the Republican Party if he gets impeached. Long-term damage could be, you know, immeasurable. But it doesn't really end the problem. All the guys that are in charge, from the vice president to the Speaker of the House, all the guys in charge, you don't want those guys as president either. So the best thing to do The thing that Comey pointed out is the vote. Get out there and vote this year. Make sure that you strip this guy of the legislative body that he needs in order to enact his white power agenda. That's the best thing to do. And I don't think the Democrats should be talking a lot about impeachment right now. Because, yeah, impeachment, it's a partisan thing. It's never, I can say this, I don't think it's ever worked out in this country. Ever. Whenever our party loses, you know, and that's either party, impeachment is the first word that comes out. And you can't do that. Sort of crybaby-ish. You know, these things go in cycles. We win, we lose, we win, we lose. And if you need motivation, if you need a reason to get out there and continue fighting, to continue resisting, just think about all of the things that have become sort of normalized with this guy. Whereas if any other president or any congressman for that matter did these things, we would be losing our minds. But I think with flooding the zone, as he's doing, he's trying to get us to accept this stuff as normal so that he can just get away with this stuff. And we have to continue to fight that. But the impeachment, I think that's probably an idea. And I agree with Comey on this. And I think that's probably an idea that we need to get out of our heads, because there's a better way to do this. Impeachment backfired on the Republicans during the 90s. And it could backfire right now. There's a small group of Republicans that are getting together, talking, and trying to push the idea of impeachment. Not because they think that Donald Trump should be impeached, but because they believe that if they can push the Democrats into impeachment, if they do take back the House and Senate, then that'll just make them look like that's all they care about. And that could be politically damaging. That could lead to another Republican win, even though Donald Trump's a complete disaster. That could lead to another Republican win in 2020. So I think we need to be careful about the impeachment thing. A little more calculated. Because it's not like we don't have a problem on our hands. We do, but we just need to be careful about the way that we go forward with it.
The president says not only should you have been fired, but that you leaked classified information, lied to Congress under oath. For both of those infractions, he says you should go to jail.
Yeah, that is not normal. That is not okay. First of all, he's just making stuff up. But most importantly, the president of the United States is calling for the imprisonment of a private citizen, as he's done for a whole lot of people who criticize him. That is not acceptable in this country.
I want to talk about loyalty. It's a big thing when it comes to the relationship between Comey and Trump. The first thing Trump did, and he does this with everybody. He says, are you going to give me loyalty? Loyalty. Competence means nothing. The Secretary of Education butchers the English language on a regular basis. Word salad, like Sarah Palin level word salad. It's insane. Scott Pruitt doesn't believe in global warming and hates the environment. Go on, go on, go on, so forth. Being awful is what is fine as long as you are loyal to this guy. And we got a lesson in loyalty this week from, and I'm super excited to bring this one to you. If you've not heard already, I'm going to get into this a little bit because I've got a long, long, long relationship with this individual.
Mueller is out to get the president, and it appears at any cost. Here's what happened. Upon referral from special counselor Robert Mueller, the FBI has raided the office, the home, and the hotel room of Michael Cohen. Cohen was never part of the Trump administration or the Trump campaign. This is now officially an all-hands-on-deck effort to totally malign and, if possible, impeach the president of the United States. What people are not understanding here is when the special counsel raids the offices of the president's private attorney, Mueller has now basically backdoored his way into every single Trump business deal.
Sean Hannity, my God. So here's the year begins. I was going to play the song today and I decided not to. I wrote a song many, many moons ago, more than 10 years ago. I've been listening to Hannity's show since 2002 or 2003. It's a long time. So it's like 15 years that I've been listening to this guy's show. In the beginning, when I first started listening, because I was a novice at politics, I didn't know a lot about it. And so I listen to Hannity and I hear him hammer on liberals all the time. And then, you know, and I would listen to all 3 hours, just like that. And it wasn't because I was listening because I thought it was so great. I agree with him so much. I thought it was interesting what he was saying. Because when he hammered on liberals, he's hammering on me. And I go, okay, so you hate me. You don't even know me, but you hate me. But I'm going to listen to your show when I listen to his show. I started listening to another conservative at about that same time named Rick Miller, who did a show out of Spokane, Washington. And Rick Miller was a conservative, but he didn't like the new crop of conservatives. This guy really was more of an Eisenhower conservative. And so he would hammer on the Bush administration. So I had these two different conservative talk show hosts that I listened to. Really liked Rick Miller. Ended up calling him, talked to him on the radio. Just loved that guy. And then it wasn't that long that I discovered Rick Miller, a veteran on the air, kicked off the air. Because how dare he question George W. Bush? How dare he question, you know, what we're doing in Iraq? And then you take the other side of that conservative coin, and it was Sean Hannity. Every damn thing the president did was the most awesome thing ever. Going into Iraq was the best decision ever. Everything is just going swimmingly in Afghanistan. You know, all these corporate oh my God, talk about tongue baths. Sean Hannity, everything that George W. Bush did was just the most awesome thing ever. Loyalty. And I began about 2005, to late 2004, 2005, just developing a deep, deep, unhealthy level of hatred for Sean Hannity. So around that time, I just joined this new band. And I've done this in the past, and I've written lyrics for my whole life. And I decided with the first song that I was going to write that it was going to be the terrorism thing, the suicide bombers. That stuff really bothered me. Really, really bothered me. Whatever your reason for being a terrorist bomber, a human bomb, I wanted to delve into what it takes to just blow yourself up and take a whole bunch of people with you. It's the first song I wrote. The second song I wrote was specifically about Sean Hannity. And it had this really nice beat. And I made my vocals rhythmic, you know, and choppy. You know, so it's something that sort of sticks in the cadence of the vocals. And it became the song that, of all of them, that was the one that really stuck with people. Of course, at that time, one of the things that I was accusing Mr. Hannity of was being a Nazi sympathizer. More so a white supremacist. And I remember a lot of people go, oh, God, it's the whole Hitler. No, it's not the Hitler card. It's the white thing. It's the whole... I just noticed that when it comes to white people, that's just, it's all of the grievances that white people sit around and complain about. He has all of those things. That's him. And so I said, I think the guy is a white supremacist. And a fair amount of disagreement, caught a fair amount of venom for that one. My dad's a gigantic fan of Sean Hannity, my conservative father. Huge fan of Sean Hannity. And then Donald Trump ran for president, and he got the endorsement of the White Knights and the Ku Klux Klan and David Duke. And I go, and Donald, and of course, his strongest supporter in the media, hands down, was none other than Sean Hannity. And you don't get to look at that and go, yeah, but that doesn't mean that Sean's a white supremacist. Oh, no, Sean's a white supremacist. Bigger and better than that. Loyal as the day is long to this white supremacist president. So I was listening to Mr. Hannity on the day when the news broke that he was the third client of Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen has three clients. Of course, Donald Trump, who, he doesn't really do a lot of legal work for him. He just makes mistresses go away. And then he's there, he's got another client. And this other client is, he's a Republican, he's an RNC bundler or financier, somebody who's at the top of the RNC. And what he hired Michael Cohen for was to pay his mistress off. The guy was cheating on his wife. All right, remember, one of these top guys at the RNC, the Republican National Committee. He had a mistress, so he's cheating on his wife. His mistress got pregnant, so he paid for an abortion, right? Here we go, head of the RNC. Or not the head, but, you know, one of the guys at the top there. One of the finance guys. And then had Michael Cohen pay the woman a little bit more than $1 million to go away. So these are the two clients we know about. Who's the third client? And the third client wanted to keep completely quiet. Because if all this guy does is make mistresses go away, perhaps that third guy doesn't want to be known. Because he's clearly got some mistresses. How do we find out that the third guy, what the bloody hell, is Sean Hannity? So I'm listening to Hannity's show the day the news broke.
All right, should I pay this off? Everybody's going insane here. Linda, you watching all this?
I don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing going on.
No, there's nothing going on. We bombed Syria. And anyway, so New York today had a big, big hearing. Stormy Daniels was in there. Stormy Daniels' attorney was in there. And I guess that Michael Cohen had to list the people that were, that he's done some work with or whatever. I don't know what the full thing was that actually went on there. So I've known Michael a long, long time. And let me be very clear to the media. Michael never represented me in any matter. I never retained him in the traditional sense as retaining a lawyer. I never received an invoice from Michael. I never paid legal fees to Michael. But I have occasionally had brief discussions with him about legal questions about which I wanted his input and perspective. And I assume that those conversations were attorney-client confidential. I guess he did some type of work for some Republican guy, so he's figuring, oh, he must have did a big settlement case for Hannity. That's not what happened, ever.
it's pretty
upsetting.
I was never
involved. Like, for example, I have all sorts of lawyers, some of which people would know their names. I just think it's hilarious that, you know, I have 15 million messages flying in and emails flying in even as we speak.
Oh, I know. I have them, too.
But by the way, I think that it just shows that Michael was doing his due diligence and being totally thorough about anybody that he might have had attorney-client privilege with.
So he says there he did some work for some Republican guy. Oh, no. Back up, Sean. The guy who was cheating on his wife, the RNC guy, who paid her $1 million to go away and paid for her to get an abortion. Mention it, Sean, mention it. And then the other thing is, a couple questions here, a couple questions there. No big thing. The reason he keeps saying no third party is so that we don't think that he paid a mistress to go away. And I understand why. Because that's all Michael Cohen does. So realizing that this investigation, the Mueller investigation, isn't just getting closer to Donald Trump and looking at potentially ending Donald Trump's presidency, but it looks like – so the reason we have the Cohen thing, and I'll see if I can get into this a little bit. They're investigating Trump. So by extension, they end up investigating Trump's lawyer. And while they're investigating Trump's lawyer, they find a larger crime. But Mueller doesn't do anything about that except tell the Southern District in New York that, hey, we think one of your guys might be crooked, and then they hand it over there. So it wasn't really Mueller that went into the office. It was they call New York and they go, hey, someone in your district is doing bad. We're gonna hand this over to you. But if you find out anything that has to do with our investigation, the Mueller investigation, go ahead and let us know. So they go into Michael Avenatti's office. And so it's not just getting closer to the president. It's getting closer to Sean Hannity. Sean Hannity knows that the president watches Fox and Friends in the morning and he watches Hannity in the evening. He watches lots of shows on Fox. And so now that the people at Fox know that he's watching Fox and know specifically what he's watching, companies pay to run ads during the time on Fox News when they know that Donald Trump will be watching. And so knowing that he watches Fox News and knowing what time he watches, every so often they'll put on things, they'll put in their programming that they want Donald Trump to believe, that they want Donald Trump to think. And Hannity, after the Michael Cohen raid, realizing that Hannity's in trouble too, Hannity puts on an entire hour-long program where it's, and I'm not, this isn't a joke. He has men basically yelling at the TV screen, right? So at the viewer, that Rosenstein needs to be fired and the Mueller investigation is fake and all witch hunt and all the rest, and that Rosenstein needs to be fired, right? The acting deputy head of the FBI. Rosie just screaming at the TV, he needs to be fired, knowing that this is landing right in Donald Trump's face.
James Comey is a dirty cop. He is a completely dirty cop who was compromised from the very beginning of the investigation into Hillary Clinton. And Jeff Sessions now has an obligation to the President of the United States to fire Rod Rosenstein after Rosenstein authorized the unconstitutional and unprofessional search of the office of Michael Cohen. Jeff Sessions, tomorrow morning, should fire Rod Rosenstein. It is not up to the president to fire Mr. Rosenstein. It is Mr. Sessions' job, and he has a duty to fire Rod Rosenstein.
Rob Rosenstein has not done his job. He has not supervised Mueller. This whole thing is an absurdity. We've now had one person, Paul Manafort and his wife, in their pajamas at 3 o'clock in the morning, having the FBI break down the door. We've had this real last week, Cohen, the lawyer, have the door taken off the hinges at 6 in the morning. We're supposed to have the rule of law. It ain't the rule of law when they kick in your door at 3 o'clock in the morning and you're faced with armed men, and you have had no reason to be told you're going to have that kind of treatment. That's Stalin. That's the Gestapo in Germany. That shouldn't be the American FBI.
So that's a clip from the show that ran with nothing but men screaming at the TV, you need to fire Rosenstein. This needs to be ended. And the voice you heard at the end, the little Muppet voice, that, of course, was former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. And I want to correct a couple of things. First of all, nobody's door was kicked in. Okay, he said the door was kicked in. Manafort and his wife were in their pajamas. It's not true. They picked the lock roughly 2 or 3 in the morning. Make sure they're in a dead sleep. They picked the lock, the FBI. They went into the house and they knocked on his bedroom door. Opened the bedroom door. And the reason that they were able to do it that way is because they believed that had they announced that they were coming, that evidence was going to be destroyed. So this is Republicans pissed that evidence was not able to be destroyed. Same thing over at Cohen's office. They did not kick in the door. They picked the lock. Put themselves in. But they had to get a warrant in order to do that. And it's not that easy to get this particular kind of warrant. So you have to go in front of the judge. And you don't just get to say, we think he's going to destroy evidence. Give us a warrant. You have to have evidence. You have to show a pattern. You have to show some sort of intent. It's the weight of evidence that's on you to prove that you need to be able to go in there and take this stuff without announcing that you're coming. Those kind of warrants are not easy to get. And that's the kind of warrant that they, of course, had to get. So obviously the problem with Hannity here, Hannity has spent his entire, and I can say this as a guy who listens to the show, his entire existence complaining about transparency. There's no transparency. The whole media is liberal. Not but liberals. No, it's not. It's not true. But it doesn't matter. Because conservatives have this idea that they're the victim. If they don't have propaganda constantly pushing their point of view, then Christ's sake, they're the victims. And he complains all the time about transparency. He should have told us. He goes, no, it's a lawyer. I just asked him a few questions, But no, you didn't. It's something deeper. And Hannity says, it's my name's out there, fine. It's not a big deal. But it's not true. Because in the court, when the lawyers were standing in front of the judge, she says, you need to prove to me that it's going to cause some sort of damage or there's some reason why your client, who ends up being Sean Hannity, can't have his name out. They fought tooth and nail to not let Hannity's name get out there. And I think it's Hannity because Hannity's been covering this case for a long time. And Hannity's been on the president's side. And Hannity's been on Cohen's side. And he's been working with Cohen and he's not told the world about it. It's what you, when you're covering news, and I hear this all the time, say if I watch Rachel Maddow. She does a story about Comcast. She says, hey, Comcast owns NBC. NBC, of course, you know, that's our boss. You know, she'll always point out, you know, and I'll listen to Tom Hartman. And Tom Hartman will say, hey, and I only hear this with progressives. Only progressives seem to be transparent on this. He'll say, hey, you know, we're going to have on this company that sells gold. But by the way, they are a sponsor of this show. And then he'll have a conversation on the air with them about gold. But he tells you ahead of time so that you know where the information is coming from. And that's important if you're going to somebody for information. And Hannity used to say he's not a journalist. Then he started calling himself a journalist. And they go, no, you're not really a journalist because you only advocate for one, you know, for the Republican Party. It's all you do. You're not really looking for the truth. So he calls himself an advocacy journalist. Okay, whatever. But one of his big shticks is hammering on people about transparency. And this is really the entire conservative media. There's no transparency. So of course, the tail of the tape, we went ahead and found out that Hannity, the thing that he just did, was totally okay. We found one of the clips of him hammering on somebody else about their lack of transparency.
George Stephanopoulos is given anywhere, it was first reported at $50,000. Now they're saying $75,000 to the Clinton Foundation. And he didn't publicly disclose this while he was reporting on the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation. He said he should have disclosed the donations to ABC News and its viewers. You think, George, maybe you thought you were going to get away with it? You wouldn't have gotten caught?
And then, of course, the best thing about this isn't just that Hannity's in trouble, and I get to watch him squirm now. This is very personal for me. But late night, when late night got to him.
It turns out Michael Cohen's secret client was Sean Hannity, which, I'm sorry, is not a good look. You know, right now, Sean Hannity's probably on the phone with his wife, like, hey, honey, it's so weird how I use the guy who pays off mistresses to get me out of that parking ticket.
And this is why Sean keeps hammering on that no third party thing. Oh, my God, honey, don't divorce me. Because Hannity's wife probably married him before he became rich and famous. Sean Hannity, little history, went on the air on September 11th, 2001. For a conservative, there's really no better day for you to, you know, wear your flag shirt and your eagle pants and whatever, super duper America, and then to go on the air on that day. And so he's been hammering on Muslims since that time and brown folks. And he's the staple in conservative American households.
That's a big detail to leave out, Sean. What else haven't you been telling us? That you share a barber with the Lego man?
All right, I'm looking at the list of materials that I got for this week's show, and I'm also looking at the time. So I'm going to have to move a bunch of this stuff to next week, but I want to finish up like this. So Zuckerberg. When Zuckerberg went in front of the House of Representatives and when Zuckerberg went in front, of course, is the CEO of Facebook, when he went in front of the Senate, the first day, which I believe was the Senate, I listened to about two and a half straight hours. Just because now I drive for a living, so it's not like I'm just sitting around staring at a TV because I don't know that I could watch that. But I was listening, and I was listening to his answers, and he really tried to play this sort of this clean cut, you know, very very thoughtful, you know, sort of middle of the road, just want America to have their voice out there, that kind of thing. Which, of course, he's a billionaire now because of the fact that they package and sell our information. And when I was listening, so first of all, bunch of old guys that don't know anything about tech, or actually a bunch of dumb tech questions. No, no, no. This isn't the place to get your education, guys. I'd like to find out about what the hell they're doing with this information. But the conservatives on the panel, the second day with the House of Representatives was probably the worst to me, because most of the conservatives, and I pulled one clip, because if I pulled them all, it'd be a whole other hour show. It was just conservatives going, Facebook is liberal, number liberals. We're hearing from conservatives that they're stifling conservative voices, and oh my God, such crybabies. First of all, as conservatives like to say all the time, it's a private company, a private for-profit company. It's not the government. It's a private company. They can do whatever they want. Other thing, they are not political. They want everybody. Why? Because as Michael Jordan used to say, everybody has money. They go, hey, are you a liberal or a conservative? And you go, I'm not going to say, because both of those groups, and I'm paraphrasing here, both of those groups have money. And so he didn't want to, you know, be hated by one side or the other. So Facebook wants everybody because everybody's got money. And then that gives Facebook money. But the conservatives kept standing up. Mr. Zuckerberg, we heard about this. We heard about that. Why are you stifling conservative voices over on?
Before this hearing, when we heard about it, we asked our constituents and our friends on Facebook, what would they want me to ask you? And the main response was addressing the perceived and in many instances confirmed bias and viewpoint discrimination against Christians and conservatives on your platform. Today, listening to this, I think the two main issues are user privacy and censorship. This is maybe a rhetorical question, but why not have a community standard for free speech and free exercise of religion that is simply a mirror of the First Amendment with algorithms that are viewed, have a viewpoint that is neutral? Why not do that?
So for conservatives, this became a platform for conservative House members. This became a platform for them to run for re-election. Now, he pointed out there, he goes, hey, I'm hearing a lot about privacy here, but what about the conservatives that are getting shut down? I think for both liberals and conservatives, you can find grievance everywhere. You can find all of them complaining that their viewpoints are not out there. And what that really means is that their viewpoints are not the only ones out there. And because everyone's viewpoints are out there, some people feel slighted and upset. And I know it's partisan, but I'm going to say it. Never is that more present than with conservatives. And that guy says conservatives and Christians. I'm sorry, sir. Which is it? Because you can't be both. Sorry. In this day and age, you cannot be both, because they do not mean the same thing. And when Hannity got busted the other day, and he was on the air while it happened, of course, he says, okay, there's no connection, and, you know, I asked him a few questions, and I don't know, we share passing glances, and it's not a big deal. The thing that they automatically went into, after sort of explaining the no whole third party thing and all the rest, the very next thing that they went into is, oh, they just hate conservatives. Why do they hate conservatives so much? Why are we the punching bag? Why are they always coming after us? It's because we love freedom.
I assumed, and obviously he assumed, and he kept his word, that they were confidential and attorney-client, but I never had any matter with him between me and any third party. How is it possible that NBC and ABC goes absolutely, and MSNBC and CNN goes absolutely off the rails over a simple thing like that?
It's really unfortunate. They are just trying to drive this Comey-Mueller narrative as far as they can take it, and they'll take anybody down that they can with it. The truth is irrelevant anymore. Attorney-client privilege, irrelevant. None of it matters anymore.
Yeah, it's true.
Very sad.
They're just trying to... Truth is irrelevant anymore. Truth has been irrelevant on Sean Hannity's show for a long time. I say that as a listener. Attorney-client privilege is dead. Everything. And then, of course, I didn't cut the clip longer, but then they start going to the whole, because they hate conservatives. Everyone hates conservatives because we're so right and we're so godly and we just love America and they hate. Okay. Dig this, Sean. The reason you're in trouble right now is because you decided to associate with Trump's lawyer. And as they pointed out on SNL, which I understand is not a news program, but they nail it sometimes. The reason Trump's lawyer is in trouble is because he's Trump's lawyer.
The FBI raided the home, office, and hotel room of President Trump's personal lawyer, Michael Cohen, this week. Authorities first became suspicious of Cohen when they found out he was the lawyer for Donald Trump. This does not look good for Trump. If being black has taught me anything, is that when the feds come kicking in your door, they got something. FBI raids are like when your girl goes through your phone. She's only doing it to confirm whatever she already knows.
And you decided to associate with him, and that's why they're coming after you. They do not hate conservatives. Hopefully, by now, and I wanted to get into Sinclair this week. I'll get into Sinclair a little bit more next week. But hopefully by now, people are realizing that the narrative that is, that there's this big liberal media arm, right? And it's the conservatives versus the world. And they need safe spaces with nothing but white people, but it's us. It is we who really need the safe spaces. Perhaps people are beginning to realize that this whole narrative that has been fed to us for a long time is that the media is just this liberal bastard. No, it's not. It's absolutely not. And Sean Hannity's going to get away with this. When they found out, Fox News, when they found out about this, they said, you know what? We didn't know about this, but we're completely cool with this. Remember, even though they've got news in their name, they're not really news. It is, as Sean refers to it, advocacy journalism. Or as we refer to it on this program, propaganda. Ladies and gentlemen, I gotta go, and I know you gotta go too, okay? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out, our official home, tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store, at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out there. You can also subscribe so you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry. You can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also to keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.